Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
91.3. Welcome back to Voice of the Cape Drive Time. As the ANC's National Policy Conference draws to a close, we know there's been some highly charged debates and some arm wrestling over terms such as white monopoly capital and radical economic transformation. Does the country use the adjective or not? And of course, we've seen a squaring up of Jacob Zuma's faction against that of Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa. But that seems to be all. But to help us understand what could be the possible scenarios for the future of the ANC is Gwen Ngwena, who's Chief Operating Officer at the South African Institute of Race Relations. Gwen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
What do you think came out of this national policy conference? To be honest with you, I didn't see much policy. I saw a lot of debate and a lot of arm wrestling over succession.
Well, yes, and that's what's unfortunate. I think it could have been really, for me, the real event, whereas opposed to most people seeing the elective conference in December as the real showdown. I think there was a real opportunity to make the policy conference the conference that mattered, especially because policy, at least, you know, the correct policies and policy reform is what South Africa needs so desperately.
And it wasn't very reassuring. We're a developing country, and I've made the point that I think South Africans, normal South Africans, that's normal people, we would have liked to have seen words like development, empowerment, infrastructural creation, jobs, but nothing like this, not even rhetoric vaguely looking like that came out of this particular conference.
Yes, and I was quite disappointed in some of the commentary that we see from political analysts and some journalists who, in my opinion, were quite quick to rejoice at the fact that there seemed to be a resolution to remove the adjective white from the term white monopoly capital. I mean, there still seems to be a broad consensus in the ANC that monopoly capital presents one of the most pressing, if not crucial, areas of focus or elements in South Africa's economic woes, and that's blatantly not true. There's widespread, policy shortcomings that need to be addressed, and this is still just a way to find a scapegoat and not face the real issues head on. So I think this is a very minimal, win that's really not worthy of much significant analysis, and I don't think it presents a policy shift in any direction whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it's like marching on the spot and sort of saying, yes. Okay, I'm now jogging instead of marching on the spot.
Well, exactly. As far as the policy idea is concerned, the idea is still the same about monopoly capital being the underlying basis of Africa's troubles. Removing one adjective doesn't change the overall thrust. But, I mean, if I can explain the four scenarios that I've presented as potentially being where the future of the ANC lies, is to say we can be fair and present two scenarios in which might be a model of economic prosperity and two models which are scenarios which might present us with further economic failure. And on the side of economic prosperity is what I would say, if this were to happen, if we were to move towards economic reform, would be most likely is the first is that of the African liger. Now, there is actually a breed of animal that is half lion and half tiger, but this term has been adopted because, well, the emerging economies in Africa are known as African lions, whereas we think that the model of development, which many in the ANC might wish to adopt, is the model of growth chosen by Asian economies. But this would obviously require some assumptions on how the ANC moves forward that we don't currently see. One, there would need to be an increased focus on building a highly educated bureaucratic or official service. These countries tend to rely on a highly skilled bureaucracy to drive the central state mandate. And with such a, such a political system, you really have long-term state planning that happens. So what usually comes out of it is one-party dominance, and multi-party democracy becomes less important. And you have a country that can maybe develop, 5-10-year political plans and economic projects for the future.
It's interesting, yes.
So as I concluded, it may be one that has, is low on civil liberties, but might still bring about the kind of economic growth that we've seen in countries like Singapore, Malaysia, etc.
Yeah, it's interesting you're talking along those lines, because the former Malaysian Prime Minister, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, there is a university in Kuala Lumpur where one of the degree courses that's done there, and there are many students there from African countries, is in fact about local government, about how to be an effective bureaucrat. Do you think we need more of the same?
Well, I mean, this is not a model I would approve of. As I say, it may bring about economic prosperity to have this, you know, really talking about growing maybe public expenditure, potentially growing the state apparatus, but it relies on a highly educated civil service to be able to occupy that role. And as I said, South Africa is, I think, in my mind, a democracy that's built around quite a strong constitution and the idea of plural democracy. And I don't think we would want a continued hegemony of one particular, you know, political party. So for me, this model I see is one that might promise economic prosperity, but there's a lot of on the civil side in terms of our, you know, the constitution, the multi party democracy, perhaps even the strength of dissident voices, media, etc., being compromised. And I think a model that best, you know, a political model that best aligns with sort of our economic future needs to be one that recognizes the role of all stakeholders, recognizes the importance of our constitution, and hopefully might engender a transfer of political power. So I prefer, even if we don't have multi-party democracy, but what we see in the United States, the United Kingdom, at least a political system in which one party might not be so guaranteed a vote, and we see perhaps the transfer of power between one or two, you know, two or three political parties in each election.
Don't you think, in a sense, we seem to be heading in this direction? If one looks at the latest municipal elections, we've seen the EFF making considerable inroads, the DA taking control of one or two cities. It does seem
growth in fact was quite marginal, and the EFF appeared around 8%, which almost matches directly the loss of support in the ANC.
Mm-hmm.
So from my reading of things, there really wasn't a change in the electoral patterns of voting.
Right.
What you rather had was a faction of the ANC breaking away, no longer voting ANC, but then voting EFF. I see no reason why we should conclude from the municipal elections there was any kind of broad movement from the ANC towards the DA. And so then it rests on whether we consider the EFF as a legitimate you know, opposition party, where their role is to maybe one day fall back into the ANC, as many political analysts have concluded. So I suppose that remains to be seen. But we'd need to see a much broader realignment, I think, to be able to make that conclusion, considering, as it were, that so many voters are continuing, or at least potential voters, are continuing to stay at home. I think the shift we've seen in the municipal government election speaks far more to South Africans deciding not to vote as opposed to a realignment of those who do vote.
So in other words, what's more significant is not the perceived shifts to named opposition parties, but more the fact that the people who are voting with their feet and staying at home, that's where we should look for the numbers.
Yes, and the continued perhaps splintering of the ANC itself, and that's why one of the scenarios I present is one of a splinter group, that when we do see votes moving, it's usually to a breakaway ANC faction. So as I said, votes move from the ANC to the EFF, and perhaps if there to be another splinter faction from the ANC, we might again see that further disintegration. But it's certainly not a shift across the political ideological divide.
Because if one looks at splinter groups, COPE, for example, was seen as a major splinter group, and COPE just imploded. As you say, the EFF captures a lot of imagination, but in terms of numbers, certainly isn't as significant as it would like to think it is.
Yeah. Well, I think it shows the challenges of starting a new political party. I mean, even recently, perhaps with the skirmish around Helen Zille and the DA recently, there were talks about, well, what if this is the result of a breakaway faction? But I think, you know, there needs to be, so people speak quite easily of breakaway factions, but I think they need to be considered quite, you know, it's a significant decision to take, because as you say, with COPE, their numbers really didn't bear out at the ballot box. I think there needs to be a combination both of the integrity of the ideas and a clear policy vision, but I think combined with a charismatic leadership that can take unite a party and follow those through. And I think with COPE, obviously, it might be the internal battles that have helped them, or sorry, disadvantaged them from carrying forward any coherent policy agenda.
And Gwen, the final question, I think a lot of South Africans and people listening to us are thinking this right now. Do you think we're going to see more forward movement on the political stage after the leadership conference of the ANC at the end of the year?
My sense is that we're probably going to see a bit of the same continuing, you know, regardless of who it is, because it's being framed as a character battle as opposed to a policy battle, we're unlikely to see the much-needed reforms that are necessary. And so whether it's a Ramaphosa camp or a Dlamini Zuma camp that wins, unless any one of those are able to forge a very clear policy trajectory that moves away from our current policy environment, then it's unlikely that things will change. I think we might see 5 years of more of the same economic climate as we did in the 80s, with a lot of stagnation in terms of the South African economy, and I think it might require a further bottoming out. I don't think South Africa has reached rock bottom. I think things might have to get a lot worse before they improve again.
Gwen Ngwenya, Chief Operating Officer at the South African Institute of Race Relations, talking about her research and her views on our political landscape. Gwen, thanks for chatting to us. Everything of the best.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.